Radio Prague News.
President Miloš Zeman has been sworn in for a second term in office. The National Security Council has met to address the situation at the General Inspectorate of the Security Forces. And Uber has reached an agreement with the government on licensed services. Miloš Zeman took his second presidential oath of office at Prague Castle on Thursday at the start of a second five-year presidential term. The inauguration ceremony in the historic Vladislav Hall took place in the presence of both houses of parliament. Some 700 guests, including deputies, senators, diplomats and other personalities, attended the event, which was transmitted on a big screen on nearby Hradčany Square. The inauguration ceremony ended with a national anthem and a 21-gun salute in the president's honor. In his inauguration speech, the president criticized the media for mentoring the public, expressed support for direct elections of mayors and governors, and said he would like to see Czechs become more engaged in public affairs. A number of right-wing deputies left the assembly hall in protest of the president's criticism of the media. After the ceremony, the head of state and the first lady visited St. Vitus Cathedral to pay homage to the remains of St. Wenceslas, the patron saint of the Czech Republic. President Zeman came under fire from many sides for attacking the Czech media, including Czech public television. Deputies from Top 09, the Civic Democratic Party, the Christian Democrats and the Mayors and Independents Party walked out of Vladislav Hall even as he spoke in protest. Top 09 leader Jiří Pospíšil said he was sorry to see the president use a stately occasion for petty attacks on his opponents and the media world, in particularly the public media. Other politicians, such as Marian Jurečka from the Christian Democrats and Miroslava Němcová from the Civic Democrats, denounced the attacks on Twitter, saying they were uncalled for and in bad taste. A meeting of the National Security Council on Thursday addressed the situation at the General Inspectorate of the Security Forces after Prime Minister Andrej Babiš said he had lost faith in his head, Michal Murín, and doubted his moral and professional authority. Mr. Babiš said his concerns were based on documents of the Supreme State Office in Olomouc, which could not be made public and with which he would acquaint members of the National Security Council. Meanwhile, Michal Murín, who said last week the Prime Minister had pressured him to resign, presented his case to members of Parliament's Security Committee. The hearing took place behind closed doors. The ride-sharing service Uber has reached an agreement with the government on conditions which would bring the service on an equal footing with regular taxi drivers. Following a meeting with Uber representatives on Thursday, Prime Minister Andrej Babiš said the app-based service had agreed to use license-only drivers who would register and tax their earnings. Prague and Brno taxi drivers have repeatedly protested against Uber, which they see as unfair competition. The outgoing government of Prime Minister Andrej Babiš has approved Major General Aleš Opata's appointment as the new chief of the general staff of the Czech Armed Forces. He will replace Josef Bečvar in the post as of May. The change of guard at the post was initiated by Defence Minister Karla Šlechtová shortly after she took office. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. Friday should bring partly cloudy skies with day temperatures between 7 and 11 degrees Celsius. The warming should continue with temperatures expected to reach 16 degrees at the weekend. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news.
This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Jan Bellinger. Coming up in today's program, Czech President Miloš Zeman has taken the oath of office for the second time, beginning his second term. We report on an online exhibition called The Faces of Resistance, presenting portraits and texts of people who over a span of decades stood up to political repression. And the last northern white rhino male fights a life-threatening infection. More in the second half of the program. That's all ahead. Czech President Miloš Zeman has taken the oath that will launch his second and final term as head of state. While Mr. Zeman has suggested he might be more conciliatory on the political home straight, his critics say he's likely to be just as divisive as in the past. Chris Johnston has the story.
part of the inaugural presidential ceremony at Prague Castle today. And Miloš Zeman, the 73-year-old veteran politician, has been largely out of the spotlight since his narrow win against second-round presidential challenger Jiří Drahoš almost 6 weeks ago. But the presidential oath taken before a joint session of both houses of the Czech Parliament in the magnificent Vladislav Hall at Prague Castle, used for such events for more than 500 years, put Zeman back in the spotlight again. After winning re-election, Zeman suggested he would be more diplomatic and conciliatory than during his first presidential mandate, when he was often described as a divisive figure whose actions were at the limits or even beyond his constitutional powers. Vladimir Dvorakova is a Prague-based political analyst. She doubts, though, whether Zeman too will be less interventionist and controversial in the future.
I think that there will be attempts to strengthen personal power of Mr. Zeman, and even that there could be less transparency dealing with the people who are collaborating with Mr. Zeman. And this is, I think, the main problem of his politics. You can agree or disagree with his politics, but the fact that we do not know something about his advisors, Chinese advisor or chancellor who didn't get clearance that he can have access to secret information and so on, these are things that are really, I would say, dangerous. And I do not suppose that it would be better.
And with the Czech Republic still waiting for a stable government, the head of state is bound to be an active player at the heart of the scene for weeks to come. Marian Keramický is one of the deputy chairmen of the political party which was created by Miloš Zeman, the Party of Citizens' Rights. He expects the president to follow much the same course, including many trips to the regions and contact with citizens over the next 5 years. That sort of contacts is one factor credited with winning him the last election. But Keramický suggests the president might perhaps be a little less forceful. Whatever the next 5 years holds, he says President Zeman has already written himself in the history and record books for his electoral success in getting and staying in power.
Certainly he will be the first to have been elected in the first direct presidential elections. In history, he will always be connected with that. When the direct elections took place, the president won all four rounds in which he took part. He will go down firmly in history on account of that.
His party has encouraged supporters to come to one of Prague Castle's courtyards on Inauguration Day to show their appreciation of the president. But protests are also expected, and some Czech lawmakers who disagree with the president's policies say they'll be wearing mourning costume at the official celebrations.
That was Chris Johnstone reporting there on the oath of office taken by Miloš Zeman this Thursday. Do you have any thoughts, comments you'd like to share with us on the occasion of the inauguration? Please write to english@radio.cz, or of course, Radio Prague is also on the social networks. Now, the Václav Havel Library, in cooperation with photographer Pavel Hroch, has recently launched an online exhibition called The Faces of Resistance. The project presents portraits and texts of about 50 people who over a span of many decades stood up to political repression and brutality, and who in certain moments displayed courage and a will to freedom. Ruth Frankova has more.
Jiří Brabenec, one of the members of the legendary early 1970s underground band The Plastic People of the Universe, Karol Sidon, the chief rabbi of the Czech Republic, or František Vindl, who helped to smuggle people across the Iron Curtain, are just some of the 50 people included in the project called The Faces of Resistance. The author of the black and white portraits, Pavel Hroch, explains how the project was initiated.
Mě přitom napadlo, že tady je spoustu velmi zajímavých lidí, kteří jsou neznámí.
I realized there were many very interesting people who are not that well known and who have brought maybe even bigger sacrifices. I wanted to meet some of those people, so we arranged to create a series of 50 portraits accompanied by CVs. I first started taking pictures of people who were in the resistance, who tried to resist totalitarian state in the 1950s. I also managed to take pictures of two RAF pilots or the head of a partisan squad from the Slovak uprising. But our goal was to show different forms of resistance, not just political prisoners or dissidents.
Političtí vězni, disidenti.
Among the lesser-known people featuring in the online gallery is, for instance, František Brož, the only private farmer in the entire Havlíčkův Brod district who resisted the communist-era collectivization, or Pavel Runkas, who secretly constructed a hot air balloon to fly over the Iron Curtain, but ended up in prison after he was arrested by the secret police on the basis of an anonymous tip-off. Pavel Hroch once again.
My jsme původně neměli daný jako výstup.
Originally, we didn't know what the outcome would be. All we knew was that it was important to meet these people, many of whom were already quite old, take their picture and record their testimony. Only then, I approached the Václav Havel Library, with whom I had already cooperated on my previous exhibition called Passion for Freedom from the Velvet Revolution in the 1990s.
Jsou fotky ze 17. listopadu a z 90. let.
The black and white portraits of people who between 1939 and 1989 succeeded in standing up to evil and risking their lives is accessible through an online Google platform called Google Arts Gallery. Meanwhile, photographer Pavel Hroch continues with the project, discovering more faces of resistance not only in the Czech Republic but also in neighboring Slovakia and among the younger underground generations. In the future, he also plans to include videos in which people will describe the impact of the communist regime on their everyday lives, their experience with the political transformation, and their view on the current political situation.
That was Ruth Frankova reporting. Now it's just about time for our main feature, where we go to the plight of the northern white rhino. And Daniela Lazareva has that report.
When Josef Wagner, head of the Dvůr Králové Zoo, brought six northern white rhinos back from a trip to Sudan in the early 1970s, he was criticized by the public for taking them from the wild. Now the zoo that he set up and the herd that was successfully bred there over the years may help to save the species that has been wiped off the face of the earth by poachers. There are now three northern white rhinos left on the planet, and all three belong to Dvůr Králové Zoo and reside in a heavily guarded nature reserve in Kenya. Last week came the news that the last male was close to death due to a life-threatening infection. I asked Jan Steyskal, head of the zoo's special projects, to tell me how Sudan is faring at present.
He resides in Olpejeta Conservancy in Kenya. He was transported there in 2009 together with other, at the time, fertile northern white rhinos. And we got news last week that his health deteriorated significantly. He is actually taken care by many veterinarians from Kenya Wildlife Service and from Olpejeta Conservancy. And we consult even his health with many other veterinarians around the world, from Germany, from South Africa. And it seems that the infection that caused his, say, severe health status are a little bit healing now. So I would say that his health a little bit improved. But to be honest, he's 45, which is quite an age for a rhino. So what we have to accept is that given his age, we have to think about euthanasia in foreseeable future.
Is this a death knell for the breed then? How many are left and what condition are they in? Northern white rhinos.
Actually, this is a thing that might sound unbelievable, but even if Sudan died, there still would be a chance that he would have an offspring. I know it sounds strange, but the thing is that there are two females that live there in Olpejeta with him. And we will try to harvest oocytes from these females, so it means eggs, and then fertilize them in a laboratory in Europe. And for this fertilizing effort, with in vitro fertilization that would produce an embryo that later could be put into a surrogate mother, we, for this effort, could use semen that is frozen. And we have a frozen semen even from Sudan. So in this way, even Sudan, sometimes in the future, could still have an offspring.
So you have frozen sperm not just from Sudan, but from other white rhinos, northern white rhinos, is that right?
Exactly. We, as a Dvůr Králové Zoo, or our partners in San Diego Zoo, we have and our partners in IZW Berlin, we have frozen semen from 5 bulls. It's a question whether semen from all these bulls could be used for fertilization efforts, but we are convinced that semen from at least 4 of them will be suitable for this lab work.
And what about the last 2 females? What condition are they in?
They're actually fine. I saw them a few weeks ago, and they were doing well. It's Nain, she is 28 now, and Fatu, she is 18. So it's quite a good age still for them to cycle. And we conducted health checks in 2014, in the late 2014. And at the time, we found out that despite the fact that they cannot reproduce naturally, they still cycle and they produce oocytes. And we presume that nothing has changed since. So it seems that we could harvest quite a good number of oocytes from them when we would go there.
So what are the possibilities then?
It seems that actually because we developed techniques during the last 2 years, we developed techniques here in Europe with our partners from IZW Berlin and with Antea of Cremona in Italy. We developed a technique to harvest oocytes from females, and we developed even a technique to create an embryo or produce an embryo. So it seems that in coming months, I can't say exactly when, because we still have to secure permits necessary for transport of the genetic material. But it seems that in coming months we could go to Olpegeta for a first ever trial to harvest oocytes from northern Vajrayana females. This would be a quite breakthrough, I would say, in the whole project to save the northern Vajrayanas through artificial reproduction techniques.
If you manage to do that, then genetically you would have a northern white rhino, but the baby would have to be carried by a southern white rhino female. Is that right? Because
Yeah, it's right. The embryo would be, let's say, pure northern white rhino, but it would have to be, the pregnancy would have to be carried by a southern white rhino female. And we have surrogacy mothers that are prepared already in Olpegeta Conservancy.
Has this proved successful with other breeds? Would the mother, the southern white rhino mother, accept a northern white rhino baby?
This is a question because it has not been done before. We assume that, let's say, immunity response from southern white rhino, that we could somehow overcome it. But of course, only when we try it, we will know it. So yeah, there might be some problems even, you know, with the southern white rhino a female organism accepting a northern white rhino embryo. But we will see.
When can we expect the first such calf to arrive if you're successful in harvesting?
Yeah. I have to admit that I get this question very often, and I never can tell when we succeed. The thing is that this is a cutting-edge science, and it's very difficult to predict what obstacles you meet on your way. So it's very difficult to predict any term when we could have a calf of a northern white rhino that would be born through IVF, even with human IVF, or even with efforts with IVF in cattle or in horses. It took a lot of number of trials before it was successful, and we have to expect the same situation with northern white rhino. So I'm sorry, I can't give exact term.
If the southern white rhino mother were to reject such a calf, is that the end of the road? Is that the death knell for the breed?
I think we will overcome it. We will try the methods how the organism could accept it. There are other ways that, for example, if I put it in an easy way, that the outside layer of a cell that would be put into a surrogate mother would be of southern white rhino. So these are options that we could explore then.
How long would it take to gradually bring them back?
Wow. I have to say that actually the ultimate aim of the whole project is actually to get northern white rhinos back to their original habitat. But even if everything would go fine and even if it would succeed with all the steps in the way that we have ahead of us, I would not expect it could be earlier than in some 50 years.
And then we would be talking about a herd how large?
25, 20? Oh, I can't say this is really, really far away. Hmm. But the steps would be the first you have to have a baby. Then you do a small population, likely it would be perfect if it would be ill, for example, in Olbeceta. But it would be wise to have even populations in zoos. So maybe to create another or produce another population here in European zoos and maybe even in San Diego in the United States. And only after you have these controlled populations and you can choose the right specimens to be reintroduced to the original habitat, then we would go for it. And of course, it would have to be in a secure habitat in the original range. So we could say, I don't know, that the number would be maybe 5 animals, 10 animals. We would see how large the range would be, what would be the situation. And because we talk about situation that is, let's say, some 50 years, still far away from now, it's very difficult to say exact number.
Would they ever really be released into the wild, or would they live in captivity in a heavily guarded nature reserve? Basically, we don't even know what the natural environment for them would be in 50 years' time.
Yeah, of course, it's difficult to predict what will be in the natural environment, but it's almost always, if you do it with the animals, that they were in a captivity or a semi-captivity, that after translocation, you keep them at least for a while in some fenced areas because they need to adapt to the environment. It can be a relatively new environment for them because they could live, for example, I don't know, 20, 30, 40 years in another environment. So definitely in the beginning, there would be some fenced area and we would have to carefully observe the animals and reaction to the environment they would be released in.
Are there any left at Vurkralové Zoo?
No. These three that are in Olbeceta, these are the last northern rhinos in the world. And the last that was left in Vurkralové Zoo, it was a female Nabire. She was actually daughter of Sudan, who is now in Olbeceta, and she died in July 2015. And the last northern white rhino in North America, it was Nola. Nola was transported to San Diego from Vurkralové Zoo as well. It was in 1989, and she died in November 2015. So from that time, there are only three northern white rhinos left. All belong to the Vurkralové Zoo and all reside in Olbeceta in Kenya.
Would you say this is a life project for you? What are you hoping to achieve in your lifetime?
It's difficult to say whether it's the most important project because I work even on some other projects that are related to conservation of rhinos. So, for example, with the black rhinos, we are not in such a situation like with northern whites, but it might be that we might be more successful. What I really would like to see during my lifetime regarding northern white rhinos, it would be to get them back to their original habitat. I would be extremely happy and I would regard it as unusual success in conservation.
And that was Jan Stejskal, you heard there, of the Dvor Kralove Zoo, talking to Daniela Lazareva. That brings us just about to the end of the program. Actually, not quite. It's time for our ongoing series, Hit of the Century, and we're now in the year 1961. Hit of the Century.
The turn of the decade brought a great dance sensation. While various attempts to create new socialist dances failed, the 1920s Charleston returned to Czechoslovakia's dance halls. Its old-fashioned spell captured young dancers and composers of propaganda music alike. One of these was Ludvík Podešť, who was chief of the Army Artistic Ensemble in the mid-1950s and composed songs like Red Army Tanks and Where We Are, Spring Does Not End, which we remembered as the hit of 1953. This talented composer wrote hits that won over the general public, regardless of the day, and a recording of his comically named song, Grandma Teach Me the Charleston, sold nearly 280,000 copies. The success of the song proved also a boon to the young singer Edita Štaubertová. Her vocals were accompanied by the experienced and upbeat orchestra of Karel Vlach. And let's follow in their shoes and learn the Charleston from Dear Grandmother. ¶¶
zemi splníš přání. Natoč svůj stařičký gramofon, zanech teď na chvilku štrikování. Řekni mě, jak se tančí Charleston. Představ si, báby, jak holky budou kulit oči, až jim zítra povím, jak se to tancuje. Už to vidím, jak se kluci okolo mě točí, oje. Babičko, prosím tě, nech ten svetr. Do Vánoc času dost, nač ten schon. Já ti ho upletu zítra metr. A co chceš, že budu večeřet a po sobě uklízet a ve všem tě poslechnu a hned, no čestně báby. Jen mě nauč, Charleston. Báby, jak holky budou kulit oči, až jim zítra povím, jak se to tancuje. Už to vidím, jak se kluci okolo mě točí, oje. Babičko, prosím tě, nech ten svetr. Do Vánoc času dost, nač ten schod. Já ti ho upletu zítra metr. Co chceš, že budu večeřet a po sobě uklízet a ve všem tě poslechnu a hned, no čestně bávím, jen mě nauč, Charleston.
And we'll be with another edition of Hit of the Century. And don't forget, you can take part in voting online for your favorite song this week. That's every Sunday instead of the Sunday music show. I'm Jan Velinger. Thank you so much for joining us this day. An interesting day here in the Czech Republic, what with the inauguration of Miloš Zeman to a second term, as I said before, but would like to remind you, please comment at english@radio.cz, send us your questions, or leave your comments online on Facebook or Twitter. That's it, though. Goodbye.